Good evening, everybody. This is the Cobcast for Tuesday, February 1st, 2010. Thank you very much for listening. I'm doing this show pre-recorded, so I don't know if this is actually going to work or not, but we're going to try it anyways. And I'm recording it at 10:20 in the morning, so I'm not going to be talking about a lot of breaking information like about Egypt, although I will just give you some background about what's happening today in Egypt. This is from the New York Times. The government of Egypt's authoritarian president, Hosni Mubarak, shook Monday night. First, as the Egyptian army declared that it would not use force against protesters demanding his ouster, and then as Mr. Mubarak's most trusted advisor offered to talk with the political opposition. The two statements, along with the damage to Egypt's economy, appeared to weaken Mr. Mubarak's grip on power just 2 weeks after a group of young political organizers posted an appeal on a Facebook page calling for a day of protest in emulation of the revolution that pushed out another Arab strongman in Tunisia. Hundreds of thousands have turned out into the streets over the last 6 days, and organizers called on millions of Egyptians to protest on Tuesday. Within hours on Monday, the political landscape of the country shifted as decisively as it had at any moment in Mr. Mubarak's 3 decades in power. The military seemed to aggressively assert itself as an arbiter between two irreconcilable forces, a popular uprising demanding Mr. Mubarak's fall and his tenacious refusal to relinquish power. So the whole point here is a lot is happening in Egypt. If you want to know what's going on, I encourage you just to go to a news site and read what they have to say, because I'm not going to be talking about that during the course of this program, because I'm pre-recording it. I'm not going to have the most up-to-date information. And I actually want to talk about another big issue that isn't being talked about much, and that's the debt ceiling. Because Congress needs to raise the debt ceiling, or, according to the Obama administration, we will go into default. Now, a lot of other people say we can avoid going into default without having to raise the debt ceiling. Because if you look, every time the debt ceiling has been raised, guess what else happens? We end up having to raise it again because we just keep on spending. And we're at a point now where we have to stop the spending, not continuing to do it, because at this point, with a deficit that is $1.5 trillion, we are now adding to the national debt at the fastest rate that we ever have. And that's a huge problem. And I actually want to get started with an editorial that David Malpass wrote yesterday that was appearing in the Washington Times. Mr. Malpass is a very smart guy, an economist, and I've featured him on this program before, but I want to read this because I think it's actually a great way to start talking about the national debt and government spending and all that stuff. So, though President Obama mentioned the deficit in his State of the Union speech, there's still no plan in Washington to slow the growth in spending. The private sector is on the hook for the rapidly growing national debt, so the president's softness on spending is discouraging. That costs jobs. So that's how Mr. Malpass starts the editorial. And this kind of sets up this problem that we have, because here you have President Obama doing a lot of phony spending measures. He's freezing non-defense discretionary spending, which is such a small part of the budget, and there's even holes in his freeze, and he's calling for new spending on, well, he calls it investment, which of course is a bunch of baloney, but, you know, that he can use whatever euphemism for spending that he wants to use. It's not going to change the fact that he's calling for a spending freeze at the same time that he's calling for more spending. Okay, more with the piece from David Malpass. The Congressional Budget Office just released its new economic and budget outlook. It's the first look at the deficit since the December lame duck spending blowout and was markedly worse than CBO's August 2010 report. Marketable national debt will rise to $24 trillion, that's 100% of gross domestic product, in CBO's 10-year scenario, assuming a continuation of current tax rates. The debt covered in the statutory debt limit, which counts the Treasury debt held in government trust funds, is $14.3 trillion and would rise to $31 trillion, or 130% of GDP in 10 years. That is unsustainable. As bad as these debt numbers are, they may get worse. The CBO based them on optimistic economic assumptions: fast GDP growth, no real recessions, spending growth slower than inflation, and relatively low interest rates on the national debt. In short, if all goes really well, current policies lead us to a 100% debt-to-GDP ratio, even though economic history shows that countries almost always collapse when government debt gets that high. Here's how the numbers work. The current marketable debt is $9 trillion. Assuming a giant tax increase in 2013 when current rates expire and an acceleration of GDP growth, debt would rise to $18.3 trillion in 2021. That's according to the CBO. If current tax rates are extended again in December 2012, as they were in December of 2010, a more likely assumption given the economic and political reality, there would be an additional $5.5 trillion increase in the national debt. That results in $24 trillion in marketable debt, more than 100% of the CBO's forecast of $23.8 trillion in GDP. So the point that David Malpass is making is that we're screwed if we don't do anything. If we just sit around and don't do any kind of real spending discipline, if we don't actually talk about cutting back on entitlements, because the thing that a lot of politicians will say, oh, well, we're going to freeze discretionary spending non-defense, which is like nothing. It's like a fifth or less of the budget. 55% of the budget is devoted to entitlements. You can't just cut back entitlements. You have to completely reform them. It's not a matter of, with like Social Security or Medicare, increasing taxes and decreasing benefits and raising the retirement age. There's a lot more that goes into that. It's about changing the structure of the system. Otherwise, we're just kicking the can down the road another 100 years. And some people do have solutions to that, like Congressman Paul Ryan, who in his roadmap basically would replace Medicare with vouchers, so that instead of having a government-run program, people would just be given a certain amount of money and then they can go purchase private insurance with that voucher. Let's see, is there anything else with this David Malpass thing I want to... Malpass, I always have trouble saying his name, I don't know why. Now there's nothing else here. The whole point is, even with, putting in rosy numbers into the equations, the CBO estimates have us heading towards disaster. And so we need to nip this in the bud now. And that starts with the debt ceiling. The Obama administration is fear-mongering by saying that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, our country is going to collapse. Well, that's not necessarily the case. And Senator Pat Toomey has a solution to that, which I'm going to get into in a few minutes. But first, I want to talk about... This is something that Armstrong Williams, who is a columnist, said about the debt ceiling. He calls this the first real test of the GOP's fiscal constitution. It's really coming down to whether we should raise the debt ceiling or not. And he says that years ago, no one wanted to talk about expanding the credit line of the U.S. government. It was such a stark reminder of how bad a hole we were in that both parties built the significant vote as a procedural move with other votes. In other words, they tried to bury the thing in hopes members would not have to rise in defense of an ever-growing nightmare. And now here we are again. Republicans are at the helm, and Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and his minions are screaming like Chicken Little that if their opponents don't do the right thing, then the U.S. will default on its debt obligations. Keep in mind, this story barely made a ripple back in February 2010, the last time the nation's debt ceiling was to be raised. President Obama couldn't be bothered with such distractions, and the White House was all too eager to revert to rule number one of its administration, blame George W. Bush. Now that Republicans control the House, Democrats are eager to see what degree of hypocrisy they'll commit on raising the debt ceiling. It just kills me that the party not in power is so eager to hug the Bible of fiscal discipline. Take Secretary Geithner's comments earlier this month. Quote, "Default would effectively impose a significant and long-lasting tax on all Americans and all American businesses and could lead to the loss of millions of American jobs." Unquote. Pretty scary, huh? The funny thing is, this line could have been written decades ago when Democrats took us down this path, or even more recently when President Bush and Obama piled onto the deficits. There's no sense in assigning blame, because both sides will wag its finger at the other for eternity. Will House Speaker John Boehner and the scores of members who were voted in on the fiscal discipline mantle allow this golden opportunity to slip them by? Well, I don't know, Armstrong Williams. We'll have to see. And what's important about this moment, just for a little perspective, is what President Obama did back in, it was either 2006 or 2008, I think it was 2006, when we had to deal with raising the debt ceiling. Obama voted against it. And he said, because what happens is we keep extending the debt ceiling and we just keep spending more money. Now if we use that argument, it's, we can't do that. The whole country will collapse. Now Ron Paul is one of the few members of Congress that actually is devoted to fiscal discipline. And he says we don't have to raise the debt ceiling. And he says that the upcoming vote will provide an interesting litmus test for the new Republican congressional majority, especially those new members closely identified with Tea Party voters. The debt ceiling law, passed in 1917, enables Congress to place a statutory cap on the total amount of government debt rather than having to approve each individual Treasury bond offering. It also, however, forces Congress into an open and presumably somewhat shameful vote to approve more borrowing. If the new Congress gives in to establishment pressure and media alarmism about shutting down the government by voting to increase the debt ceiling once again, you will know that the status quo has prevailed. You will also know that the simple notion of balancing the budget by limiting federal spending to federal revenue remains a shallow and laughable campaign platitude. Of course, congressional leaders, now Republicans in the House, will tell America that they plan on balancing the budget soon, but they just need some time. After all, we have to keep the government open, right? We can't have an emergency shutdown of vital government services. But somehow, government always finds money for emergency spending in the forms of supplemental appropriations bills for TARP bailouts, troop surges, and the like. Why is there never an emergency that justifies less spending? Surely we are facing an emergency debt spiral, as evidenced by the Federal Reserve's recent commitment to buy another round of Treasury debt. It's now quite obvious that the U.S. government plans to inflate its way out of the debt, and the world is fleeing our dollar in response. And then skipping down a little bit, I have two simple proposals when the new Congress convenes in January. He wrote this a little bit before January, so it's a little bit old, but he makes a good point. First, refuse to raise the debt ceiling. Find a way, month by month, for Congress to spend only what the Treasury raises in revenue. Second, start over from scratch with the 13 appropriations bills that fund the federal government. Reject any talk of baseline budgets or discretionary spending. It is all discretionary, and members of both parties should vote against any 2012 appropriation bill that is not at least 10% smaller in nominal dollars than its 2011 counterpart. Now, what The Obama administration response to Ron Paul is, oh no, you can't just spend that amount of money because we have other things that are going to automatically be, there's all automatic spending already built in to the government that's going to take us past the debt limit anyways. Well, and we can change that. And Pat Toomey has a great way, a great plan. And what's interesting about what Ron Paul has to say, before I get to the Pat Toomey thing, is he brings up a really good point about how what the government always tucks in spending into all these other bills. It's, you know, these earmarks and a lot of other things that get, you know, tacked onto the TARP bill, or, you know, in approving the troop surge, there's all this extra stuff put on. It's pretty disturbing the way that Washington does this. And typically, the debt ceiling doesn't get a whole lot of attention paid to it. But because there is finally the political will to oppose the raising of the debt ceiling, this is becoming a big issue. And so you have people in the media saying, oh my God, if we don't do this, the government's going to collapse. And you have the Obama administration freaking out about this. Oh my God, if we don't do this, everything's going to collapse. It can't be that they just want to spend more money. Oh wait, maybe that is what it is. Because they want to grow the size of government no matter what. Now, Pat Toomey has a plan to deal with this. Here's what he said. This is from the Wall Street Journal, I guess it was January 19th. As members of Congress debate whether to raise the U.S. debt ceiling, the limit on our government's debt, we should all agree on at least one thing. Under no circumstances is it acceptable for the U.S. to default on its debt. Not only are we morally obligated to honor our debts, but we benefit greatly from the nearly universal conviction that those who lend to us will always be repaid on time and in full. We should never undermine that conviction. Fortunately, even if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling, a default on our debt need not follow when our borrowings reach their limit in the next few months. I intend to introduce legislation to make sure of this. For months, some political leaders and commentators have argued that failure to raise the debt ceiling would necessarily cause the U.S. to default on its debt. President Obama's Council of Economic Advisers Chairman Austin Goolsbee recently warned, quote, if we get to the point where you've damaged the full faith and credit of the United States, that would be the first default in history caused purely by insanity. I don't see why anybody's talking about playing chicken with the debt ceiling. In fact, if Congress refused to raise the debt ceiling, the federal government will still have far more than enough money to fully service our debt. Next year, for instance, about 6.5% of all projected federal government expenditures will go to interest on our debt, and tax revenue is projected to cover about 67% of all government expenditures. With roughly 10 times more income than needed to honor our debt obligations, why would we ever default? So the whole point he's making is, we just pay our debts first, don't pay for the other stuff. As long as we keep paying off our creditors, we won't go into default. And let's see, to make absolutely sure, Congressman Toomey intends to introduce legislation that would require the Treasury to make interest payments on our debt its first priority in the event that the debt ceiling is not raised. This would not only ensure the continued confidence of investors at home and abroad, but would enable us to have an honest debate about the consequences of our eventual decision about the debt ceiling. If we do not raise it, the government's tax revenue will enable us to fund roughly two-thirds of projected expenditures, including interest payments. Without the ability to borrow the other third, spending cuts would be sudden and severe. Projects will be postponed, some vendor payments will be delayed, certain programs will be suspended, and many government employees might be furloughed. Default would easily be avoided, but these cuts would certainly be disruptive. That's why I hope we can avoid this scenario. But it would be even worse simply to raise the debt ceiling without regaining control of federal spending. The recent surge in spending, both in absolute dollars and as a percentage of our GDP, has driven us to record deficits and an explosion of debt. The growth in discretionary spending has been the most dramatic, but in the future, mandatory entitlement spending will be the deficit driver. Government must address both in order to put the government back on a sustainable fiscal path. The vote on whether to raise the debt ceiling, and if so, by how much, is our best opportunity to insist that any increase in our nation's debt be coupled with concrete steps towards fiscal sanity. For too many years, Congress has ignored or exacerbated, the looming fiscal crisis created by overspending. Last fall's elections were largely a call to finally deal with this imminent threat, and the vote on the debt ceiling is Congress's opportunity to begin making real progress. We can do so without jeopardizing the full faith and credit of our country, and we should. I think Senator Toomey's plan is great. I mean, it makes perfect sense. And he is right that, yes, you know, a massive cut in government spending would be disruptive. That's why I say, fine, let's raise the debt ceiling, but let's also enact this thing that we pay off our debts first. And then in the next few years, let's actually cut back the government spending dramatically. We can't do it all in one year, all at once, because we've got to be very careful about what we cut. Let's be very methodical in it, in doing it. So yes, I think we should take a meat cleaver to the budget, not a scalpel, as Obama said. But we should make sure that we're cleaving in the right spots. And in some cases, it's not just, you know, getting rid of certain departments that are completely unnecessary, or returning certain things into the authority of the states. It's also looking at Medicare, Social Security, and dramatically reforming them, because those programs are going to be the big drivers of our national debt, big contributors to our national debt if we're not careful, if we don't do anything. If we just allow the things to consider, if we allow the status quo, then guess what? We're never going to get out of this mess. Look at countries in Europe. In response to the recession, they have been dramatically cutting back on government spending, especially a lot of big entitlement programs. You have the United Kingdom thinking, you know what, maybe this cradle-to-grave welfare state isn't such a great idea because it's really expensive. And it also kind of, in the long term, I think, demoralizes people when you're so dependent on government. Because then guess what? If the government can't afford things, suddenly you have a bunch of people riding in the streets and lighting cars on fire. So what is the solution? I think Senator Toomey's thing, a small extension of the debt ceiling, and forcing fiscal sanity so that within the next decade, not only will we have a balanced budget, but, you know, we will, by doing so, and by, I don't know, dramatically reforming the tax code and a lot of other things, we'll have a big rebound in our GDP. Because we really, really, really need to think about our competitiveness on a global scale. We need to think about making sure that we're not such a debtor nation, because we have the ability to have a balanced budget. It just takes the political will. And Michael Tanner of the Cato Institute suggests that Republicans shouldn't surrender on the debt ceiling. The question, though, is would, you know, the bond market crashing be worse than the alternative? I think it would kind of be, but he thinks that even though our credit rating would be dramatically reduced if we don't raise the debt ceiling, he thinks that long term it's going to be bad anyways. And let's see, if the debt ceiling is not increased, the Treasury can prioritize interest and debt payments to avoid a default and essentially put the government on a stringent pay-as-you-go basis. Now, he thinks that it's okay if we put a bunch of workers on furlough. I just think that would be so dramatic that it would be a mistake. But I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea. We'll have to see. Now, hopefully this worked, because that does it for the podcast. for this Tuesday, February 1st, 2011. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 in the West. If you want to listen live, if you choose to listen after the fact, go ahead. Don't forget to visit my blog. It's the American Truth Machine. Also, follow me on Twitter. And I will see you on the flip side.